Or at least we have the skill to edit. There we go. Here's our initial sound.
I think it gives me so much faith in my community to see this many people show up. It's like a light in the darkness.
That is Ava. She is from Brainerd. She's 18 years old. And that's some sound from a vigil that was held. It was in response to detainees from ICE that are in the Crow Wing County Jail, but that was planned before the killing on Saturday in the state of Minnesota of Alex Preddy. And though it may not seem like season watch, Charlie, I thought it was really important for us to begin it that way. I'm Heidi Holton with Charlie Mitchell, and partially because it was outside. We got that outside sound, yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. And also because of the idea of hope and being outside in frigid weather, but that nature can kind of provide something for us at this important time in life.
Absolutely. And I think a time of like very stark contrasts of the darkness and fear mixed with these moments of community and feeling like we can make a difference. And something that I have been feeling really grateful for is this beautiful place that I live. So I often feel very small and powerless in the face of some really big societal issues. And I think getting out into nature, looking up at the stars, sitting by the river, makes me feel small in a much healthier way, where, you know, the woodpecker outside my window does not care what is going on in the human world right now. It's just after some suet, and then it's going to, you know, give some sass to another woodpecker, and it's going to fly off and keep warm. And, you know, no matter how much we, like, pollute the sky so we can't see the stars, they're still there. The aurora is still there. We humans can do a lot of terrible things to each other, but we live on a beautiful planet in a really wonderful universe, and as hard as we try, we can't mess that up. And that's comforting to me right now.
There's a lot that's comforting about nature and phonology, the voice of John Latimer, if we just even talk about voices. The sound of a voice, not even the content, the voices of the children, which we'll hear in this podcast, people connecting, communicating, not arguing, not being terrible to each other is sometimes I need that as a model, really is striking. You know, Season Watch podcast, this is where we talk about curiosity, right? And delights of nature. And I think everybody needs a little delight at this moment. And, you know, it's a little bit like, I remember John Latimer kind of, he probably doesn't do this on the air, but he's chided me before, right? Of if I'm walking in the woods, if I have my earbuds in and listen to a book on tape, right? Which, how old am I, book on tape? Anyway.
I was going to say something and I decided not to.
Thank you. That's nice. Yeah. But it's that paying attention, it's shutting down the noise. So one of the things that we are talking about is how we get through this time, and that might be even in these frigid temperatures, getting outside more, but also that might mean for you or me monitoring the media sources that you're taking in. You know, what John's really saying is don't have a million things going on.
Yep.
He's talking about nature, but it's bigger than that.
It is. Yeah. There's a little time to check out and especially just be around the wider world. Lose yourselves in things that have, like, been there forever and are going to be there forever. Endless forms most beautiful, as Darwin would say.
It's interesting that you kind of say that on like what we've done to the planet or the moment that we're in. And because one of the things that came up this week, despite how cold it is, that there is some good that can be done, right, in nature. Part of the reason we have things like invasive species is because we don't have extended cold like we used to.
Yep.
Or maybe that's all the reason.
Cold snap.
I don't know. Yeah, so John talked about that a little bit this week. Should we take a listen?
Yes.
We did hear from Bill in Wabana. John, I just wanted to let you know that I hit 40 degrees below zero on Friday morning, the first time in several years.
Yeah, it's been a while since we've had minus 40. I think back in the early 2000s, for me, I had 39 below zero a couple years ago, probably in 21. I'd have to go back and look, but there was a period there where I came close and I thought, I'm going to make it. But I was 27 below zero on Saturday morning. So Friday night, it would have been early Saturday morning. I had 27 below zero. And early Sunday morning, I had 33 below zero. Friend of mine who lives just west of town and up off of the Mississippi River a little bit had 33 below zero on Saturday morning. I live south. I'm like 8 miles south of Grand Rapids. And Bill is another 15 miles north of Grand Rapids. So there's 25 miles from my house to his house. And I'm not surprised that it got to minus 40. And the other thing is, the lake that he lives on is surrounded by steep hills, and so it's a settling pond for cold air. Cold air is heavy. It sinks. So I'm not at all surprised to hear it got to minus 40. It takes negative 40 to kill things like the emerald ash borer, but it has to be negative 40 below the bark where the grub is living. And it has to be more than just, you know, it can't just touch there and then warm back up. There are a number of emerald ash borers that probably died in the recent cold snap, but not all of them. And the ones that survive are probably going to be those cold hardy ones. And if they continue to evolve and survive, what you end up with is an even lower temperature at which the emerald ash borer larvae will perish. But you have to take some comfort in knowing that you've certainly thinned the herd a little bit.
You know, I feel like you're reading my mind. I was going to bring that up. There were last Wednesday, I was listening to the morning show and the Beltrami County Master Gardeners were on, and they were talking about that too, about how these cold temperatures, there is an emerald ash borer in Beltrami County yet, but is there a certain number of days that it has to be where it really has an effect of being below... Being 40 below, or
the research that I read was simply, you know, they put them in a freezer. Mm-hmm. They monitored the temperature and then they monitored the outcome. And at minus 40, if you have the grub at minus 40, it's going to die.
Okay.
And so I would think that, you know, any exposure to minus 40, even if it were as short as a half an hour, would do it. But I don't know that for a fact.
Right.
And as I said, it's got to be minus 40 where the grub is. Mm-hmm. And there's a layer of tree bark between the grub and and that air temperature. So I hate to invite it, but the longer it can get to minus 40 and stay there, the fewer of those bugs are likely to survive. And we may not kill them all, but we will certainly reduce the population.
This is probably really resonating with you, Charlie.
It sure is, yeah. Darn emerald ash borer. Since I moved back to Minnesota, I think 2021, and the first place we lived was in one of the first-ring suburbs of the cities, and we had this lovely balcony that I would work at on the first ever Season Watch newsletters, and would have meetings with you out on that balcony. And it was shaded by these two huge ash trees. And the first year I lived there, they were gorgeous. The shade was great. the second year I lived there, they butted out really oddly, and there were all of these shoots coming up off the base of the tree. And the year we moved out, they were dead. I'd watched them that winter with all these woodpeckers coming in and pecking, and the bark would just flake off and leave this really pale underbark. And they were killed by the emerald ash borer. And so that last spring, it was just blazing sun on the balcony. It was much harder to work out there. But, you know, I would watch the squirrels in those trees. They would, like, gather up branches to build their drays. In the hot days, they would just pancake out on a branch to cool themselves. Yeah, it was a real shame to lose those ones.
And now your family's facing this, too.
Yep. So I moved here and I think sometime between 2022 and 2025, and was like so happy to see all of these lovely ash trees, which I had just learned to identify since starting this job. I was like, oh my gosh, look at them all. They're doing so well. And then last year I saw some ash trees on the south end of our road with that way too pale bark flaking off. And I was like, oh no. And sure enough, this year the trees were, they didn't have their full foliage. They had like all these weird sprouts growing out of them. Bark is peeling off of them. They're dead. And so my dad has been chainsawing a lot of them down to use for firewood for maple syrup season, which will be good. But, you know, it's especially now that I know how to identify them, and like these trees are specific beings. They aren't just like trees in a forest. They're like, oh, our ash trees are gone. And all of the insects that are specialized on these trees, and birds that like to use these trees for these purposes. And the joy of learning more about nature is that you get to see it in all of its beauty and complexity. The downside is that losing it becomes so much more painful.
Yeah, I think that's sort of our theme today, right? Is the what we're feeling, this connection to nature, how we express it. John was explaining there the I just hadn't thought about the bug actually being under the bark and that it's warmer there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's just so many aspects of this that are, you know, there's not a magic cure, right? I mean, if we could have cured emerald ash borer, we would have, but it's bigger. There's the roots are out there of how everything's interconnected and all of that.
And there are a lot of smart people working on it, but you know, that doesn't save the trees out my window. Just the complexity of, negative 40 will kill 98% of the emerald ash borer larva. Okay, but how long does it need to be at negative 40? Is the actual inside of the tree negative 40? I have that study pulled up.
Ooh, there we go.
If you're interested.
Yes, I'm curious.
Yeah. So it was done by some scientists at the Northern Research Station, USDA Forest Service, and the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. They took the logs felled from some emerald ash borer infested trees and put them in different cold treatments over the winter, and found essentially when the larva within those like blocks of wood reached 0 degrees for 72 hours, only 5% died. At negative 10, 34% died. At negative 20, 79% died. And then at negative 30 Fahrenheit, 98% will die. So this is for the St. Paul population of emerald ash borer. The native emerald ash borers, the ones over in Asia, China, can only tolerate down to minus 9.4 degrees. And ones in Ontario have adapted to the cold to the point where they can tolerate minus 23 degrees for average. And so you see this evolution happening in front of our eyes, where like China, the majority will die at minus 9.4. Here, minus 13. Ontario, minus 23. Like, evolution happening right there. It's so cool. Yeah. But unfortunate, because they can move north.
Yeah. So let's stick with this idea of cold and of trees, mm-hmm. and we get a chance to hear from one of our classrooms that came in this week.
And our next report comes from Bertha Hewitt Elementary's trip to Long Lake Conservation Center near Palisade.
Hi, this is Tegan
and Payson from Bertha Hewitt Elementary. During our trip to Long Lake Conservation Center on January 22nd and 23rd, it was really cold. Really, really, really cold, with a high temperature of 7 below zero and a low of 30 below zero. It was the coldest temperature of the year. The last time it was cold was February 13th, 2021, when it reached 31 below. Many schools in the state were closed, but it didn't stop us from getting outside and exploring. In the warmth of the day, we bundled up, played snow snakes on the lake, and went cross-country skiing.
We learned that when it gets really cold, trees that are holding lots of moisture can crack and explode. No trees exploded during our trip. We tested a theory with a frozen banana if it can pound in a nail, and it actually did. Then we tested if blown bubbles can freeze. That also happened. Although we went exploring, the mammals seemed to be bundled up. We only noticed a few chickadees, a nuthatch, red-bellied woodpecker, and red and gray squirrels. They grabbed a quick meal of seeds and quickly went back to warm up. It always feels fun to explore nature, and we encourage everyone to unplug, bundle up, get outside, and live connected.
Yeah, thank you, Tegan and Payson. That was a nice report. I'm glad you guys got there. Not only am I glad you got there, but I'm glad you went outside. You know what? I mean, you might be my age someday, and you'll be telling your grandchildren about how you went outside when it was 30 below zero, and you lived through it. It was okay. So, yeah, congrats on that and cross-country skiing. I wanted to expand a little bit about the exploding trees because my daughter sent me a text saying that she had seen this thing about exploding trees. I reminded her of her youth and how our house would do the same thing. You'd be sitting in the house when it was really cold and the wood would have enough moisture in it that it would freeze. And as everybody knows, when water freezes, it expands. And if you've got it trapped inside of a 6x6 post like at my house, or a 6x6 beam or a 6x8 beam, that water is going to push against that beam until it breaks it, until it cracks it. And what's happening outside is essentially the same thing. And especially maples, if you look at the red maple trunks, you'll see these long fissures that are the result of freezing and cracking. And when that happens, it can be a kind of a sharp noise, a bit like a gunshot, but it's not. And there's no danger. You could wrap your arms around that tree, and when it exploded, all you would feel is a little shiver of energy going through your arms. It would not blow you to the ground or fill you with shrapnel. It's just a little bit of water pushing its way out, and the tree is going to sort of crack open. So
your house did not explode. That's not what you're saying.
No, 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 no. It pops.
Yeah, I hear the pops and cracks of our house.
I think that's normal for people that live up here. You hear it and you realize, oh, it's cold out, very cold out.
Well, we've dispelled the myths that trees are going to explode.
Yes, that's not quite how it goes, but it is such a fascinating sound, though, the pop and crack and yeah. I was looking more into that and discovered that our native trees. Kind of, you know how the wood frogs, some of our frogs will produce a natural antifreeze where they can freeze solid. The ice won't pop all their cells. Our trees do the same thing. Many of our trees have a antifreeze inside of their, above ground growth that will protect them from, well, not protect them from freezing, but lower the temperature below. They would need to get much lower than 32 degrees for that sap to freeze. And that's one of the things that really protects our native trees. Apparently, quaking aspens can survive temperatures colder than 50 below zero. And so, yeah, that can happen to our native trees, the cracking and the popping. But non-native trees are more susceptible if they aren't from a colder climate. So yet another way that these deep cold snaps end up protecting us. Thanks, Winter.
I think it's so interesting because a couple of episodes back, right, we got the sound of the lake forming, the frozen lake forming.
Yes.
So kind of this eerie sound. Now talking about the pops and cracks and then the kind of, you could maybe look at the antifreeze of the frog as being sort of like mysterious. And, you know, it feels like it's describing winter here. And then you add that to the pounding of a woodpecker, all these sorts of sounds. It's just making me look at winter a little bit differently. I think this will be the first spring that we are doing the Season Watch podcast. So I will probably feel differently and will completely fall in love with spring again, of course, in a different way. But I've appreciated kind of stopping in the middle of everything right now and paying attention to some of this stuff.
Absolutely. My dad is a musician. He's been working on this piece called Deep Time, where it's a four-part, like four movements, and each corresponds to a different eon of geological time. And hearing you say that just made me think about the music of the seasons.
Yeah.
And how right now it's very percussive,
mm-hmm.
with the woodpeckers drumming and the trees crackling and the lake ice admittedly sounding like weird lasers.
The squeak of the snow. That was from last week, right? Uh-huh.
And then soon, like, we'll get the birds entering in as more of a, I don't know, what section would that be? Strings?
Or the woodwinds. It's like the flutes.
Woodwinds, thank you.
Right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. I mean,
and
I know.
We get the frogs chirping soon.
I mean, I know Vivaldi has the four seasons and those sort of probably, I never paid attention to, though. I noticed they were different. I didn't notice if those, each section of that was mimicking kind of what we feel and see. So interesting. Wow, interesting work by your dad there.
Right? I know. He's a cool old dude.
He doesn't just cut down emerald ash borer.
No.
Or make maple syrup. He is also creating music inspired by geology and weather and nature. It's amazing.
And you wonder where I come from.
Yeah, no, I know. I immediately got back to it. Well, I think that's a great thing to, I think we'll end with kind of a percussive sound, but we want to give thanks to everybody involved in Season Watch this week and a big reminder of that there's lots of information that we have available at kaxc.org. Whether you are into nature and you want to kind of, you know, listen to some of the scientist interviews we've done, some of these sorts of things if you get real curious, but also like the voice of someone from our community, from a vigil or news team covering what's going on in the world. And it's a great place to feel a little bit more connected.
Absolutely. And our music team has been DJing us our way through this as well. Thank you, news team, or music team. So as we close out here, I just want to say thank you to Chelsea for the recording, and Ava, of course. To lead us out, we have a recording of the downy woodpecker drumming. You'll notice they're kind of short, staccato little drumming sessions. This was recorded by Peter Mundale.
Also, a reminder, we'd love to hear from you. Go to SpeakPipe. We have links available on our webpage, also in our podcast platforms. Tell us how nature is keeping you going. Right now. I'm Heidi Holton with Charlie Mitchell.